Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, and we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today and use promo code THEGAME. Athletic college football writer Mitch Light joins us now. Mitchell, always appreciate our weekly visits with you. Mitch, we got some angry Vols fans on the line, and I know even the ones that didn't call in are angry, and it's calling, you know, to replace Joe Milton, and everything sucks, and everything is terrible, so on and so forth. And look, it was a bad game on Saturday night against Florida in the Swamp. In your opinion, from what you've seen, what's Tennessee's problem?
They're not last year's team, and they got spoiled. And, I mean, obviously that's the goal once you reach a certain height, offensively, defensively, as a team. It's natural for a fan base to expect, hope that you reach those heights every year. And, you know, the way Tennessee was ascending and the way Florida was seemingly descending, that's not what anybody expected. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. Why, you know, Florida played very, very well. Great atmosphere. You can say what you want about Florida's program, but, you know, when you a night game at the Swamp is I wouldn't say it's as good as it gets, but it's in the very short list for great environments. And obviously Florida played, I thought that was a key to Florida playing well very early. But one thing, and I, you know, it's early statistically to look at stats, Caroline, but, you know, I think Tennessee's pretty well represented. Like, they played a FCS team, they played a bad Power 5 team, and a, you know, solid Power 5 team. So it's not like they played three really good teams or three really bad teams. But I just looked this up. Tennessee is averaging 7.3 yards per attempt as a pass, as a team. And that's, to me, that's the best passing stat. You know, how efficient are you throwing the ball, you know, down the field? That's 13th in the SEC. Last year, they averaged 10 yards per attempt, first in the SEC and second in the country. Basically, they were first in the country. Air Force was first because, you know, they don't throw the ball much. So when they do, they get big chunks. And then they're not getting big plays. Same thing. You look at the stats for plays of 20-plus yards and 30-plus yards. They're in the bottom 2-3 of the SEC, where last year they were in the top. So, you know, football is a much easier sport when you can score in big plays. And Tennessee did that better than maybe than any team I've ever seen last year, scoring on first drives and scoring very quickly. So, you know, now why aren't they doing that? There's obvious reasons to that, but it's just that they're not as nearly as efficient as they were offensively.
And I think it's clear that although Joe Milton, it's clear that he's not Hendon Hooker, and that's okay. But moving forward, you know, we've talked about, you know, is Tennessee going to continue to be a contender, or was 2022 simply lightning in a bottle? What do you think? Because this season it looks like, yeah, it's not going to be an 11-2 season where, you know, you go to the Orange Bowl and you beat Alabama. But moving forward, is there still hope for Tennessee fans?
Of course. And it's a quarterback sport more than ever, now more than ever. And, you know, this offense, when it has the right quarterback in place, it's proven it can be very effective, efficient. Now, one thing that's interesting is, you know, historically throughout football forever, it's like defenses adjust, and you can say what you want that, you know, about SEC having, you know, great defenses and great coaches and all that stuff. I think there's a little bit of shock value with the Tennessee offense, especially last year with all those weapons. You cannot prep for that in practice. And that's why Tennessee scored so quickly last year. I thought, like, I don't have the stats, but it seemed like they were up 7-0, like 2 minutes into every game. And one thing I want to say about Milton, like, I don't fault any coaching staff for this, but in, like, this day and age of fandom and fans, like, you know, just devouring every piece of information from a coaching staff and the media, like, I fully expect this staff to back Joe Milton in the offseason. And, you know, he's our guy. He can, you know, he's ready and all this stuff. But some of that can backfire because fans expect no drop-off at all. And then when the season starts, there's a drop-off. You're like, what's the deal? You told us all offseason that this is Joe Milton's team and he's ready to do all this. So it's kind of it's a game that coaching staffs have to play kind of in this day and age. But again, I don't fault Tennessee for doing that.
Now, Mitch, do you see – because their next, you know, their next game is, you know, they should win that handily. But yes. Then after that, they got South Carolina, A&M, a bye, and then Alabama. If they can't win at least one of these games before the Alabama game, do you see a possible quarterback change, or do you think they don't want to even throw the freshman in there against Alabama?
Yeah, it's a tough one to answer because obviously, you know, not at practice and don't know enough about how, you know, again, they're saying the right things about Nico, which you would expect them to do. My guess is they really, really don't want to go down that road. But you never know, you know, what's going to happen. You know, do they, if they lose to South Carolina and Joe Milton plays well, but the defense, you know, gives up a bunch of yards and points, that's one thing. If they play South Carolina and he throws a pick six and overthrows three receivers, whatever, then sometimes you have no choice but to make that move. So I would think this coaching staff really doesn't want to do that, because also if they're struggling as a team and the fans are on them, and then you put the freshman in and let's say he's just not ready. You know, and then he struggles. I'm not saying it's going to damage his confidence beyond repair, but that's just, then what do you do there? Do you go back to Joe Milton? Like, where's his mindset? So it's, you know, this off topic here, but Deion Sanders, I know no one likes talking about Deion.
Nobody's talking about that.
Yeah, no,
I wonder why.
He's the head coach at Colorado. He played defensive back in the NFL. You guys might have heard of him. But Cormani McClain was this big recruit in the offseason. He was number two recruit nationally, committed to Miami, flipped to Colorado on signing day. And with their roster, you know, they got a lot of unproven guys. Everyone just assumed this Cormani McClain would start at cornerback for Colorado this year. Well, Deion was asked at his press conference, I don't think Cormani McClain has played a defensive snap, and he's just like he's not ready. You know, you guys, you see his recruiting ranking, all this stuff. He's not ready to play. When he's ready to play, he'll play. So I'm like not defending coaches here, but you can't just assume that a freshman is ready to play because he's got a high ranking. So, again, not that coaches are infallible and all that stuff, but it's just a lot of times we just don't know.
What is going on in Alabama?
Ooh.
I mean, this whole quarterback situation, I mean, I don't think Saban has ever, since I've followed Alabama, since Saban's been there, I don't think he's ever been in a position like this where he hasn't had a quarterback, period.
Yeah, I mean it's a quarterback sport right now, and they are searching for answers, and they're not getting the answers. And it's just the bizarre. This isn't a rookie head coach or a guy that has a history of flipping quarterbacks, so that's why it's so surprising that it's. And like even if you saw his press conference, like announcing that Melrose was going to be the starter going forward yesterday, it wasn't exactly the most ringing endorsement or had the most confidence, you know. And I'm not comparing the teams by any stretch, so don't take this out of context, but Willie will remember this. It feels like sort of Derek Mason's first year at Vanderbilt when he had, like, I think they ended up starting four quarterbacks, kept switching them. There was no rhyme or reason, and I'm sure it did not do great things for the locker room. So that's another thing we have to look at Alabama. Like, what's the locker room think? Are they a Milroe? You know, do the guys want Milroe to play? Do they want Buckner to play? So it's a delicate balance that coaching staffs have to play. We just haven't seen this type of situation in Alabama where we rightfully are kind of questioning what's going on with the Nick Saban decision.
Mitch Light is with us. Mitch, what about the Deion phenomenon, though? It's really interesting, the warp speed. Like, he got the attention early, but now with these wins, Caroline just texted us a stat that the audience, and I was half awake, I was trying to stay awake, it was fighting it, but it was like 1:15 Central Time. 2:15 yeah. Eastern time, and they still had an enormous audience there. The intrigue, the media on 60 Minutes and, like, morning shows. It's like Dan Le Batard used to call it the Oprah Club. Like, it's gone past the sports audience here. It's an unbelievable phenomenon. What do we see coming here?
Yeah, well, I mean, along those lines, you know, my mom, who kind of follows sports, she knows, you know, she's an educated sports fan, but she texted me like 2 weeks ago, what time is the Colorado game? Like, you think my mom was ever texting me like what time the Colorado game was? So it really is something that we've never seen, but I think we've never seen this in college football, how it transcends, like, not just the hardcore fan, the casual fan. And, like, hey, I work for a company. We sell subscriptions. We monitor things by how many people click, how many people subscribe to certain stories. There's a reason we write about Deion a lot. Now, we pride ourselves on being smart on it and have, you know, but you look at the Athletic's website, I guarantee you there's been more stories on Deion/Colorado in the past month than, you know, well, Athletic's only been around for 6-7 years, but clearly in the 7 years before that combined, there's a huge appetite for it. And I'm a sports fan, not just a college football fan. It's a fascinating subject, and no one expected them to be this good. Now, this good needs an asterisk. You know, the first game they won at TCU, that's impressive. TCU's been good since. Nebraska's not a very good team. Keep in mind, Colorado State got blown out at home in its opener to Washington State. So could they be in for a quote-unquote rude awakening this week at Oregon? Maybe, maybe not, but they've already exceeded expectations. We did a story where our writers talked to some like staffers in the Pac-12 anonymously before the season, and it wasn't like a hit job on Deion in Colorado, but they're just like, this team's going to win three games. They're not good in the offensive line, they're not good in the defensive line, blah blah. We haven't seen Shador against big time competition. So hey, I'm all for it. I think it's a great story, and you know, I'll be, you know, I'm with you guys. I tuned in till 1:30 Saturday night, Sunday morning to watch the game.
It's pretty amazing. Mitch, you and I have endured a lot of painful Vanderbilt losses over the years. This one, I have to say, was right up there in the how could that happen kind of stuff. Clark Lee, he says it almost every time you listen to him. He wants to win on the margins. He wants to be a team that is exceptional in the execution of the little things. And they've been the complete opposite so far. It's got to be driving him crazy. They're playing a lot of young guys. So, yeah, I mean, that was a loss that's going to be tough to overcome. But what did you see there, and where can they go from here?
Yeah, I mean, just way too many just dumb mistakes. You know, turnovers are going to happen. But you know what? Turnovers are okay if you're playing Georgia and your quarterback's pressured and he makes a bad decision because he's pressured. They're not okay when you're playing UNLV and you just drop the ball, or you're like, it wasn't even a turnover, but on that botched punt where the, you know, the guy slid into the snap. I mean, it's just inexcusable, really. They cannot make mistakes like that. And I was just curious. I did a little, you know, about turnovers. You know, coach said, oh, turnovers, we got to win the turnover margin. We got to win the turnover battle. Listen to this stat. The last 13 years, from 2010 on, Vanderbilt has had a positive turnover margin four times, went to a bowl game all four times, even turnover margin twice, 5-7 last year, close to a bowl, and then a bowl game. Negative turnover margin seven times, no bowl games. There you go. How important is it to win the turnover? If you're Vanderbilt and you have a positive turnover battle, you're probably going to the postseason. If you don't, you don't. They are last in the – now, they played one more game, but they have the most turnovers in the SEC, like almost the most in the country there. It's just they're not good enough to overcome that against the teams they're playing in non-conference. If they continue to play that sloppy brand of football, it's going to be really ugly when they play some of these better teams in the SEC.
Mitch, appreciate you as always. We'll chat with you next week.
Sounds good. Awesome. Talk to you guys later.
Thanks, Mitch. Mitch Light, he covers college football for The Athletic and does a great job doing it. Hey, Caroline, Willie, and D-Maze is brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.